The Positude Podcast, a one-hour show to bring joy, balance, and happiness to you and to negate the negativity in your life.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Indeed, indeed. Welcome once again to another episode of the Positude Podcast. As always, we are here with Maggie Hart. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Ira. How are you? You had a nice trip out yesterday to the zoo with your family?
I did indeed, and it was nice to get out in the sun, but boy, I'm glad to be indoors again.
Oh, I bet you are. So jumping into our first story, we have for Sunny's story. This one's kind of a long one, but I thought it was really cool. It's about a man who dresses up as Spider-Man for sick children in hospitals to visit sick children and dying children. He says, holding children as they take their last breath, you'll never feel more vulnerable than you do in that moment. He visits 10,000 sick children, up to 10,000 so far. He said, I've done so much in my 34-year life, played sports, worked hard labor, wrote and performed music, and eventually became Spider-Man for children battling the odds all across the world. Everything started when I hit an ultimate low financially in the beginning of 2014 and slept on the couch of my friends Kristen and Michael as they graciously offered to help me get back on my feet. After months of trying to find hard work, I kept coming up short until I landed a personal training job at a local gym. I enjoyed being a trainer, but something was still missing. As I was still on that same couch, living out of a duffel bag and washing clothes every other day, I fell asleep one night in early June and had a dream that would change my life forever. As I drifted off into dreamland, I was greeted by my grandmother, who had just recently passed away a few months prior. She put her arm around me and told me that she had something to show me. She proceeded to walk me toward an old school looking reel-to-reel movie projector and turned it on. A huge movie of Spider-Man walking toward a children's hospital shot in the sky. He walked through these double doors, and on the other side was thousands of kids lying in bed, hooked to hospital tubes, IV poles, and more. He began swinging around, bringing them joy through jokes, toys, and taking pictures. The kids' faces lit up when he got to them. In confusion, I looked at my grandmother and asked her what all this had to do with me. She looked at me very seriously and said, that is you, and when you wake up, that's what you'll do. At that moment, I literally awoke from my dream, still on that couch, living out of the same bag, just as broke as I was before, but there was a huge sense of curiosity pertaining to the dream I just had had. I mean, it's all so real. So I started a Google search for realistic Spider-Man suits, and after a while of searching, I came across a man who custom made them. Before I knew it, we were negotiating a price for one. Even though I was broke, I knew I could come up with whatever he said. We came to a price of $1,400, and I told him I would message him once I had it. I looked outside into the parking lot of the apartments I was staying at and looked at my car. It was a luxury car I had paid off a few years back before my finances plummeted. It was a Dove Edition Chrysler 300 to be exact, and it was the only thing I owned of any value. I knew as I gazed upon it that I would have to sell it. So not even 24 hours later, I did just that. I used the money to buy that first suit and purchase a small Honda. I had to wait a few months to get the suit. And in those months, I went back and forth on whether I was crazy or not. But those same friends I stayed with supported me so much that they offered me free rent and food to see how much good I could do. While waiting for the suit, I emailed every hospital in the Bay Area, California. I live in Pittsburgh, an hour outside of San Fran. Every single hospital emailed me back with a no due to my non-existent experience with children. Although discouraged, I knew God wanted me to do this and nothing would stop me. So October of 2014 finally came and I got my first Spidey suit. I tried it on and my friend Michael took pictures of me on his phone. We couldn't believe how real to the character I actually looked. I didn't announce what I was doing on social media yet, but a fitness client of mine referred me to her godson who was very sick at a local hospital. The hospital said I couldn't visit him, but the child's mother asked me, do you work for the hospital or for God? That question stopped me in my tracks, and I answered, God. So that led me to visiting my first child ever by sneaking my suit in my backpack, changing into a bathroom close to his room, and rushing to his side. I spent an hour in there before security kindly asked me to leave, but mission accomplished. His godmom sent me pictures of the visit, and I was in tears by the smile on his face. I knew I was supposed to do this with my life. After that, I began visiting special needs children, autistic kids, homeless kids, foster kids, and disabled children. After a few months, I announced what I was doing on social media in hopes of gaining credibility to get into hospitals. Well, it works because after months of making visits to kids at home and other facilities, Oakland Kaiser asked me to come monthly. Next thing you know, I had 4 hospitals a month regularly to see. Parents began posting about how much the visits helped their kids, and it just kept growing from there. I started a GoFundMe to help pay for toys so that I could bring them to the kids, and shortly after that, I realized I needed to create an actual nonprofit. The demand for the service became overwhelming, but I was up for the challenge. The friends I was staying with then moved to a house and offered me a free room on the terms that I would train them and do more Spider-Man visits. Of course, I accepted. In February of 2015, I started the paperwork for a new 501c3 organization known as Heart of a Hero. Once the nonprofit was built, I became a very busy man. I had to stop training people because I was so booked and it took up a night security job to make ends meet and cover what the company couldn't pay for. As I continued to visit the children, the severity of what they battled got worse and worse, and before I knew it, I was visiting terminal children. The first child I ever met who was terminal was named Charlie Derange. He was 9 years old and was battling a terminal brain tumor known as DIPG. I made over a handful of visits to Charlie and became very close to him and his family. It was excruciating watching this disease take away his mobility, his speech, his childhood, and eventually his life. Charlie passed away, and his funeral was the first of a child's that I had ever attended. It tore me apart, but it filled me with a sense of duty, and I knew I had to go on for kids like him. 2 days after his funeral, I was back in the trenches doing God's work. Since I began in October 2014, I had seen roughly 10,000 children. I had traveled all the way to London to visit a girl named Zamora Moon several times. She was battling the terminal tumor DIPG as well and receiving treatment there. At the same time, I was becoming good friends with 18-year-old Daryl Akins, who was battling leukemia. We were more like brothers. I mentioned both of these children because I actually stepped out of my suit for them to help their parents' caregiver, change diapers, feed, pray, wash, all of that. It was an intense experience, to say the least. After coming back home from London, Zamora was flown back to the Bay Area because her tumor progressed. Her mother asked me to be at her side, and of course I said yes. I spent the next 7 days with Zamora until she passed away, holding my hand. 2 weeks later, I literally held Daryl as he took his first breath, coaching him to the other side. After his passing in the same month, 3 more children I was extremely close to passed away, making the total of 5 in just 1 month. After watching his kids pass away so closely, my world was turned upside down, and I started experiencing great amounts of anxiety. I was almost passing out several times a day. Along with all the kids passing, my friends I lived with were moving to Florida, so I was losing their presence as well as having to figure out my living situation. Everything came all at once, but God answered by bringing us a supporter who basically paid for a whole year's rent at my house so that I could continue his work, but also to focus on healing. What a blessing. I tried fighting through the anxiety as if it would simply pass, but I continued to deteriorate. I was at a Denny's in Sacramento before heading to the hospital the next day when my volunteer Beyonce asked, "You okay?" And I began to cry uncontrollably. I admitted for the first time in 3.5 years that I needed a break. So I took a whole month of September 2017 off. In that month, I was diagnosed with PTSD, generalized anxiety, and depression. I found myself in therapy and eventually went on a low dose of Celexa, 5 milligrams. In that month, I questioned if I could continue. If I could handle more of what I've been doing, it got so dark. I hit a low I didn't know was possible. I woke up every morning and fought those feelings to go to the gym and do small chores around the house. I mean, here I was, this man who had traveled the world, inspiring kids, and now I could barely take out the garbage. But I kept believing and praying, and I went back to duty as Spidey in October of 2017 with a few modifications. I used to be suited up and traveling 6 to 7 days a week. Now I gave myself restrictions to protect myself and the longevity of the mission. I'd only suit up 2 to 3 times a week. I worked through my anxiety with all of my new tools to combat it through December, and I again took the month of January 2018 off. As February rolled around, I felt more confident than I ever had before, feeling more like myself. Since January of this year, I've gone nonstop fearlessly, and yes, it's been more difficult with these new added challenges, but it helps me relate to the children more. They feel nervous, and so do I. Plus, we both don't like hospitals. Visiting children is my passion, and I've been tested beyond measure in doing so. Nonprofits are up and down financially as we are in such a low that I sold my car yesterday to come up with money to survive, as well as continue being Spider-Man. I won't give up and am relentless in my need to share the stories of these children, holding children as they take their last breath. You'll never feel more vulnerable than you do in that moment. Every other difficulty in life, I've been able to shake and move forward, but this, it's something I'll never shake, and I've come to terms with it My life is theirs and my journey goes on. So that's the first story. What do you think?
Well, I've run across the story of Spider-Man before, and I was amazed at the work that the guy is doing. He is doing some really incredible things. And I'll tell you what, man, those kids, they are so appreciative of the things that he's doing and just being there. And he's making all of the difference, to say the least.
I know. You know, we've done the story before. I think I covered the one where the superheroes were window washers outside the hospital. Didn't we cover that?
Long time ago, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been over 2 years in May since we've been doing this show. I just was thinking about that the other day. Boy,
yep.
Time flies, doesn't it?
It does.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's an amazing story. And I think the way that he's handled it and how he's made it his full life's mission is so cool. It really is. And, he's given up everything. I mean, it's so admirable. And the fact that he's dealt with anxiety and he talks about his anxiety issues and PTSD just is, it goes to show you that people that have those types of issues can still continue to break through and move on and help other people, even though they have issues of their own. I thought that was really neat too. Even though they developed as an aside to him being Spider-Man, right? I thought that was neat.
Exactly.
For Positive Phenomenon this week, this is actually about a Twitter story. And the man says, the story really starts years ago in 2009. Aunt Barbara, my mom's sister, was diagnosed with peripheral artery disease. She had to have the open bypass surgery, which was about a 20% chance of not making it through the surgery. She made it through, albeit never quite recovered. She was always in pain and the surgery had complications. My mother watched her younger sister struggle for years and couldn't fight the pain. She became so addicted to opioids during this time that she passed away last year after I got out of the hospital. We knew the surgery was bad, and seeing it firsthand, we realized how bad it was. Fast forward to last year, March of 2017. My arm was swollen, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. It kept getting worse, but doctors kept sending me home. I kept going back again and again. Misdiagnoses after misdiagnoses, new doctor after new doctor. Finally, I went to UCSF. They figured out that I had thoracic outlet syndrome. It quickly went from, you might have a fully blocked vein, to your vein is being blocked by your rib. We need to remove your rib. Well, that escalated quickly. About this time, I decided to share my story, mostly for myself, but also to remind people to keep going to the doctor. Keep telling them if something isn't right. Keep asking and getting a second opinion. Don't wait to go to the hospital. I waited months too long. I sent this tweet. Daily reminder to go to your doctor and get a checkup. Thanks to all my friends for coming by today and my mom, first surgery Monday. I got a random private message from somebody I had never met. He told me I should go see Dr. Lee at Stanford, one of the best cardiologists in the game, and that he specializes in this. The DM that he wrote said, Shane, sorry to hear. If I understand it, it's the same or similar surgery I had at Stanford a few years ago. Happy to share my experience. PM me if you want. Kick ass tomorrow, Dave. So he wrote back, hey, love to hear your experience. This is exactly what's happening to me. I just had a blood clot surgery done, and they didn't find a clot. They found a smashed vein and a nerve instead. So now I'm waiting for them to come back for next steps. Every time I work out now, my arm swells and is sore. Would you say the rib removal is worth it? They wanted to do that on Wednesday. The man wrote back, if you're recovered and can talk, let's find a time to talk by phone. Happy to talk you through my thought process. And this is the guy that did the surgery. He sent out the profile. And the guy wrote, hang in there. And so the gentleman sent him the profile of the surgeon that had done his surgery. And he wrote back, thanks so much. Dr. Lee just called, said this is exactly what they should be doing. And the man wrote back, good, reassuring. Let me know if I can help in any way. Don't hesitate. Shane says that Dr. Lee called him within 30 minutes. I told him everything and asked if they should remove my ribs. He said, yes, and that the doctor doing it was a good one. So I did it. After a month, my arm was really bugging me again, though. It felt completely blocked, so I decided to reach out to Dr. Lee again, and he responded instantly and brought me back in. So Dr. Lee wrote, hey, you called me a month ago, and I wanted to say thank you. It turns out I went back yesterday, and the clot is still there, or back after TOS surgery and removal of rib. I'm now scheduling, or rather, he wrote this to Jason, the guy that had helped him. I now scheduled for IR Thursday at UCSF, and I was wondering if I could request my medical records and send them to you for a second opinion. My conversations and questions are not being clearly answered, and I would love another opinion. I have good health insurance, et cetera, if there's a more proper route to go. Can I send over my records? Thanks in advance. So Shane says he went. I discussed all the possibilities, and we got to a place that was manageable. A week later, my aunt died. My mother had been there for me and helped me so much, then lost her sister the day after I got out of the hospital. Fast forward to about 4 months ago. My mom and I were at a concert in L.A. When we left, she couldn't walk with me. Every few steps, she stopped. Her left leg would swell up. She knew what it was. She just didn't want to say it. I said, you have to go to the doctor. Three words came back from the doctor, peripheral artery disease. She was devastated. I remember the first call. She said a general doctor in L.A. told her that she needed to have open bypass surgery exactly, like her sister had. We were devastated. We talked it through and made plans to get a second opinion, but planned to do the surgery in July. We would get through this. I had to get a second opinion. I thought about Dr. Lee, the guy who messaged me from Twitter, cardiovascular. Maybe he could help. I got all of my mom's files and I sent him the email. He responded instantly. He said three words, I can help. Then he said, how quickly can you be here? She flew up a week later. He said that there's no way she needed that surgery yet and that he could do a microscopic version and she should be good to go. She did have 90% blockage in the arteries and they would have to do both legs. We thought this would take a long time for recovery. What happened next, we couldn't believe. My mom flew back on Mother's Day. My mom couldn't walk up the stairs to my apartment or carry her bag. She could only walk a little bit then stop. We spent the day together being lazy. On Tuesday afternoon, they started the surgery. Here is a picture, and then he's got a picture of what they looked like before surgery and her legs. They look positively horrible. The surgery took about 2 hours. She then had to lay in bed and not move for 6. She stayed the night at the hospital, and I got to a hotel. She woke me up at 7 a.m. Come and get me. They're about to let me go. Less than 24 hours later, they were letting her go. I wondered how much pain she'd be in. I showed up, and she's sitting in a chair, didn't have to take any painkillers, and said, let's go get a burger. She walked out of the hospital. No big surgery, 90% of blood flow back, and felt 1,000 times better than she had 24 hours earlier. We went and had a burger, and then she wanted to see how far she could walk without pain. 1.5 miles. The first day, zero pain. It honestly felt just like a miracle. A seemingly random message ends up connecting the dots to one of the best doctors who made this happen. Such is life, randomness that becomes meaningful. Can't say thanks enough for that random message and for Dr. Lee always responding. He saved my mom's life, and I'm Twitter for life. I believe the world is full of people helping good people and that most people are good. Just by simply sharing the situation I was in on Twitter, a stranger wanted to help. That's the social media good that I see happening. I believe it happens more than we think. I still can't believe it saved my mom's life. So what do you think about that one?
Well, for me, I've had some really bad experiences on social media, but I've also had some really good experiences as well. And although Twitter is not something that I get into, I know a lot of people are using it. And, I mean, I've seen a lot of good come out of social media. I think one of my things as far as that stuff goes, though, is people spend way too much time on it to begin with, you know, as opposed to doing some kind of real world actions or things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's a great story and it's a great example of how it's really supposed to work, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, the social, you know how I feel about the social media thing as well. I was forced into it, not really a fan, but there you go, you know. Proceed to hope. Yeah, I mean, it's positive sometimes, I guess, right? I mean, here's an example. Yeah, I have, you know how I feel about it. But anyway, we do it, right? So proceed to hope. This one actually is an older story, but it really touched me. I've been seeing replays of it on social media, so I thought I'd share it. This is about an older Memphis man who actually is a drug addict. And the headline of the story is, I'm a human being. Memphis man in viral sidewalk overdose video finishes rehab. Ronald and Carla Hires were both in their 60s. They had just overdosed after snorting heroin and were unaware of the crowd that had formed around them, some laughing and joking at their state. The group surrounded the couple as they were passed out on a Memphis, Tennessee sidewalk in the middle of the day, barely moving. One man, Cortland Garner, broadcast a profane video of the pair live on Facebook, while others took photos. The two were just blocks away from Memphis's medical district, And one passerby wondered out loud whether they were dead, even checking Ronald's pulse. They were not. Now, nearly 2 months after the video went viral, Ronald Hires was spoken out for the first time exclusively to CNN. Both he and his wife survived that day after being revived by first responders using the drug Narcan, which can reverse opioid overdoses. Both were given scholarships by Turning Point to attend rehab in separate facilities. Hires quietly watched the video of what had happened on October 3rd, the incident that he says he has no memory of, and cringes as he hears people laugh and joke as he is barely able to move. His wife is lying face down on the concrete. "I am a son, a husband, a brother, a grandfather, a father. I'm a human being," he said. That's what so many people missed about it. Those were two human beings. A couple of weeks ago, Ronald finished treatment at a rehab center in South Haven, Mississippi, just across the state line from the site of his overdose, and will live in a supervised community living home to help him transition back to life outside of the center and to stay clean. Carla has been getting treatment at a Turning Point facility in Massachusetts. The 9-minute Facebook Live video that was broadcast to the world, which Ronald has called the lowest point in his life, has had more than 3 million views on Garner's Facebook page. But part of what drew in viewers is the fact that Garner is heard laughing at the pair. Garner, who filmed the couple passed out, did not respond to attempts for an interview, but he addressed questions by online commenters who criticized him for not helping the couple and for laughing at them. He told one reporter that someone else had already called 911. He told CNN affiliate WREG that he laughed because they were doing children things. It was a spectacle. It made me laugh. In a separate Facebook Live he posted on his profile page the day after the incident, he explained why he filmed the couple instead of trying to help them. "I don't deal with people on drugs like that. I don't know what they're capable of," he said. "I know kids beyond social media." Ronald Hires was visibly upset as he heard Garner and others laugh at his expense, but he said he is not angry at the man. "He did not put myself nor my wife in that position. We put ourselves there. Had it been his mother or father on that sidewalk, on their face, he would have certainly called 911 instead of filming a video to see how many hits he could get on it." It was Ronald Hires' 34-year-old daughter who ultimately got the pair help. The mother of three, who wishes to remain anonymous, said that she had a strained relationship with her father, with minimal contact for more than a decade. "As soon as I had my daughter at 21, I was like, I'm done with you. I'm not going to expose her to everything I've been exposed to," she said. "I just completely put him out of my life." Days after the couple's overdose, WREG put together a story about the video, and Ronald's daughter saw it. It was her birthday, and the timing rocked her. "I was like, what are you trying to tell me, God? What am I supposed to do with this? I can't help him. We've all tried. We've told him to get help. We've thrown money at him," she said. "I was supposed to see that video. I felt something in my heart that I hadn't felt in years, compassion to help." His daughter called the number for Turning Point's addiction help hotline at the end of WREG's story and managed to persuade him to go to rehab for the first time in his life. The company allocated scholarship money for both Ronald and Carla to get help. Carla is still completing her treatment in Massachusetts. In a statement she said by the facility, she said that she has been addicted to opioids for 40 years and called the incident a wake-up call. "I'm very optimistic about my recovery and feel like God has reached down and pulled me out of a very dangerous situation," the statement read. "Since the video surfaced, I learned that I can trust people, something that I never did before. I don't feel hopeless, helpless, and useless anymore." So there you go. There's just what we were talking about earlier, a negative aspect that ended up thankfully being a positive story about social media and how people, you know, to me, I will never understand how I see these videos going viral of children being beaten up in schools with other kids taping and watching, incidences where teachers are being bullied and beaten up in schools by students and the other students film and watch, stories like this. I mean, you have a couple overdosing on the sidewalk, and people just tape it and don't watch. But thankfully for these two, for this couple, in the end, it eventually worked out okay. But just still, what is wrong with humanity? I have to question. And there again, you know, just what we were talking about before on social media, here is an extremely negative aspect to social media.
Yep, and that is... That is definitely something that I've seen very frequently is exactly that, you know, where people just they videotape, or instead of calling 911 to help or to do, you know, be of service to somebody or something along those lines, they pull out the video recorder, you know, they pull out the camera on it and start recording. It's so sad to me to see the literal inhumane way that humans are treating each other.
It's just positively awful.
It really
is.
It
is. It's horrible. And I don't understand it. I'll never understand it. But hopefully, through doing stories like this and shows like we do, people will maybe understand how crucial it is that we help each other rather than harm them. You know, and like I said, thankfully in the end, this one turned out okay. But it's just, to me, very, very upsetting. So those crazy kids, this one I loved. A 9-year-old girl makes dolls to comfort kids needing surgery. She's a 9-year-old entrepreneur, and she says she's on a mission to make the world a better place by bringing comfort to kids needing surgery through her love of sewing. She found her passion after going through her own difficult journey. "This is my office," says Charlotte Gould, founder of Stitches by Charlotte. "My Nana brought out patterns like how to curve and stuff," she said. "She taught me how to sew." Charlotte sews and sells dolls and gives the proceeds to Barrel Cleft and Cranial Facial Center at St. Joe's Hospital. She sews each doll herself. "I sew it piece by piece," she said. Her dream is to create a line of surgery companion dolls for children undergoing surgery. She's already made quite a few. Maybe 10 cleft dolls, one doll for a girl going through chemotherapy, and one doll for a baby who was born with only a half of her heart, Charlotte said. She does this because surgery can be scary. She would know. "I was born with a cleft lip and palate, which means I was born with part of my upper lip missing," Charlotte said. Charlotte was also born without a palate and has already undergone several surgeries. "One at 3 months old, one at 9 months old, and two when I was 4, she said. "It really changed my life in a lot of ways. And she may need another one. I might have to have a bone graft," she says. "It is definitely emotional," said Nicole Gould, Charlotte's mom. "It makes me cry and it makes me smile. Sometimes it's funny to look back and think the days that were our worst days ended up being the best days of our life. Now Charlotte wants to help other kids smile through her sewing journey. This is what I'm meant to do," she said. In fact, she was just named as a finalist in the Imagine If with GIF contest. The contest searched nationwide for young entrepreneurs making the world a better place. "Charlotte is handling it pretty well," her mom said. "She's a hard worker." Each of the 3 finalists created an Indiegogo campaign. "I just need $60 more to get $17,000, Charlotte said. She's hoping that she can get to $20,000 to go toward marketing, a website, and improving her doll's packaging. "It would just help me give back to the cause that made me smile," she said. "I just hope my dolls give smiles." "We're going to chase this dream as long as she wants to," Charlotte's mom added. The campaign ends on December 31st, and Charlotte will find out if she wins in January. If she becomes the grand prize winner, she'll receive $20,000 from GIF to bring her idea to life. That's in addition to the $10,000 GIF added to her campaign when it first started. Isn't that cool?
That really is. I like that story a lot. That is really cool. That is really cool.
I know we did one a couple months ago up with a little girl that made angel dolls too, remember?
Right, yeah.
She was a little bit older though. She wasn't 9, I don't believe. She was like 12, 13. But these stories are amazing. And the little girl, if you watch the video, she's just so cute. And the fact that she was inspired because of an issue that she had with a cleft palate, that's really cool too, I thought. I've known of children that have that. And it's, you know, they get picked on a lot in school. They get bullied. They get teased for looking different. So here's something else to lift them up and make them smile, especially before they're going for surgery. Furry Heroes is it's a story of another reuniting of a military guy with his dog, which I thought was really cool. Air Force Staff Sergeant was reunited with his military dog after nearly 3 years. Adam Wiley of Bethel, Ohio, and Emra, a 9-year-old military dog who is retired, saw each other for the first time. And they had served together for 2 years from 2012 to 2014 in South Korea. Adam Wiley's eyes well with tears as Emra slowly made her way toward him. Kneeling down, he grabbed up the thin Belgian Malinois, his hands pressing deeply into her tan fur. "Hi, baby girl," he whispered as she stole a lick on his face. It had been 3 years since Wiley and Emra last saw each other in person, although they did FaceTime each other once about 6 months ago. Wiley, a staff sergeant with the U.S. Air Force, worked with Emra from 2012 to 2014 in South Korea. Wiley was Emra's handler. They were responsible for performing patrol duties, being stationed outside Pyeongtaek and Osan Air Base, deterring incursions by enemy personnel. Wiley and Emra also performed safety sweeps during visits from top U.S. officials, including President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. "She means the absolute world to me," Wiley said. "I was sent to South Korea after about 25 days after the birth of our daughter. Emra was one of the first individuals I came into contact with. She was also the one I looked to for emotional support with my family being so far away. We worked 12 to 13-hour shifts, and she was the only person I had to talk to." On Thursday, Wiley, 33, and Emra, 9, were reunited in Cincinnati. Emra is retiring because of old age and has been adopted by Wiley, his wife, Kelly, and their 4-year-old, Chloe, who reside in Bethel. "Words can't express how I feel right now," Wiley said, holding Emra close to his chest. "She's beautiful and still shedding. I'm just so thankful." American Humane, a Washington-based nonprofit group, funded the cost of bringing Emra home to retire on U.S. soil with the support of Crown Media family networks and individual donors across the country. American Humane's Amy McCullough said that the organization is happy to reunite the two. "We make every effort to get military dogs adopted by their former handlers," she said. According to Wiley, military dogs like Emra are a great asset, not only for the specific job they're assigned, but also the companionship they provide. "I see Emra as a person," he said. And you can, obviously, by the way he talked previously in the interview, he does absolutely view her as a person. He says, "We have a deep emotional bond that can't be touched." And I thought that was amazing because dogs, military dogs, we talked about this before, they're most definitely heroes and they don't get enough recognition. And more, I'm seeing articles about how retired military dogs are being put to sleep. Have you seen any of those stories?
I have, yeah, unfortunately.
That's just so upsetting to me. These dogs are truly heroes. And the fact that there are some of them that are being retired and are being put out to pasture when they're not of service anymore just breaks my heart. So stories like these are really important to share, I think, and they're very, very touching stories. And I think that this should happen more. I think we should definitely support organizations such as this that allow for that to happen. And the military guys are so attached to these dogs. They absolutely love having them back. I haven't heard of a story yet of a guy that was offered his military retired dog back that said, "No, I don't want it," you know? So why that's happening and they're being put into shelters where they're being euthanized, I don't know. But that shouldn't be happening, in my opinion. Happiness homework. All right, this one's really easy. Thank your mailman. I'm watching these guys out here. It's finally started to get warm in this area. And I mean, it's 80, 90 degrees. And these ladies and these gentlemen are walking around huffing these sacks of mail up and down. The hills here are amazing. It's almost like San Fran. I mean, we have these huge, long hills going up and down. And these guys are walking out in the heat. They're always pleasant. I have to say, I have a couple of mail people. They switch off and on here. I'm not sure why. But they're always smiling. They're always pleasant. And they're walking in, you know, 80-degree heat, 90-degree heat, freezing cold in the wintertime. And, you know, I just don't think that they're appreciated enough. I try and make an effort every year at Christmas time. I put a card. Now I hand it to them because we actually had people around here robbing the cards out of mailboxes for cash. So I make sure that I hand them the card on holidays and stuff. But, you know, if I don't have money, I'll give them a treat. Sometimes I'll hand them some cookies if I see them. Or if I see them walking up and down the street, I keep water bottles and granola bars in the car for when I go to like the airport or the bus station around the metro area. I hand kits out to homeless people. We talked about that before, but those are also handy for me to keep in the car when I'm seeing a mailman who's walking around because I can give him a bottle of water or a granola bar. So I think we should do something. Cookies, a treat, send him a card, anything. Pick a couple flowers and hand them to him if it's a girl. And you know, I mean, don't freak her out and act like you're hitting on her, but you know, something nice, you know, I think that it's important. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, those guys, they definitely do a lot of hard work. My wife, she worked outside for 9 years, and I know, you know, how much it impacted her body to work, you know, in those kind of conditions, the extreme colds, the extreme heat. She was there every day doing it, you know, and these guys not only do, you know, that heat and everything like that, but they're walking around, you know, they're very, very active, physically speaking, you know, and it can be really hard on the body, to say the least.
Absolutely. And I just, one thing that I've noticed is up and down the block here, I mean, in my immediate area, I have a couple of wonderful neighbors and they're really respectful. And, you know, like they talk to the mailman and or mailwoman and ask how their day is going and, you know, socialize with them a little bit if they're out watering their gardens or whatever when the mailman passes by. But for the most part, nothing. You know, I mean, they don't acknowledge them at all. You know, I see them walk right past some of these guys and they're sitting out on their porches or, you know, out in the yard or whatever. And it's like they don't even exist, you know, and I feel sorry for them. I do. So, yeah, I think that's a cool idea. It doesn't cost you a lot of money. If you don't want to put money in a cart, like I said, just give them some cookies or a snack or, you know, a bottle of water. Offer them a glass of lemonade or sweet tea when they come up in the summertime. Something like that. You know, we can go into Comedy Corner. I've been talking a lot. These were long stories. I need a little bit of a break. What do you think?
Sure, we can do that. That's for sure. Here you guys go.
My allergies are killing me. I need to get a drink.
Here you guys go. Enjoy. This is I love these guys. They're great.
Nice.
Yeah, let me talk to the pretty little girl right here. Let me talk to the pretty little girl. Is it okay? You want to talk? Oh, cause she's so cute. What's your name?
Mia.
Mia? Wow, that's awesome. That name officially travels right now, because before you, it didn't. I got to be real with you. Mia, how old are you, Mia?
Six.
Wow, that is awesome.
And about to turn 7 this November.
Wow. She just outdid you, dude. You thought you knew some stuff. Wow. So what grade are you in?
First
grade. Cool. You going to do it again? I did that a couple times. You want to try it again? No? Okay. You can do it that way if you want. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? A little Mia. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Are you having a good time, Mia?
Uh-huh.
Have you been to a comedy show before, Mia? Okay. Are those your parents next to you?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Which one you like the best? Don't answer that, Mia. Don't answer it. Don't even make eye contact with her, Mia. You are awesome. Mia's all pretty and stuff. All right, so break time is running a little long. You got any questions for me, Mia?
Uh-uh.
You sure?
Uh-huh.
All right, so this is what we're going to do. It's a 2-minute window. You can ask me any question you want, any question at all. Here are the rules. You have to say, Michael Jr., I was wondering. And I'll give you an answer, a response, a reaction. Some comedy could be created on the spot. With that being said, the window is open now. Any question at all, just raise your hand. We'll bring your mic. It'll be awesome. Yo, my man right here in the green got a question. Are you running too, right? Okay, there's some hands up if you want to get them. All right, cool.
Hello. What's your favorite?
Whoa, 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 whoa. The rules are simple. It's Michael Jr. Go ahead.
Michael Jr., I was wondering, what's your favorite joke?
My favorite joke, it's not even a joke, it really happened. My son, 4 years old, looks at me out of nowhere. He says, Dad, I want to be a doctor. I was like, yes, yes. Then he said, or a dinosaur. My favorite right there, 100%. All right, my man in the back, what's your name?
Wyatt.
That's an awesome name. Doesn't travel. Ain't no black Wyatt. Sounds too much like white. I'm just saying. Nobody is the black Wyatt. Make up your mind. Awesome. Wyatt, what's your question?
Hey, Michael Jr., I was wondering, do you like to dance?
Wow, let me think about that. You want me to do a dance for you? That's what you're looking for, little Mike? I don't think so, okay? Sit your little Wyatt self down somewhere. How about that? All right, we gotta give him some free stuff or something, because he was hilarious. Yes, awesome. Let's not ask any adults, apparently. What's your name?
Olivia.
What is it?
Olivia.
Olivia, your name travels. All right, what's your question,
Olivia? Michael Jr., I was wondering, why'd the chicken cross the road?
That is so racist. I can't believe she asked me that. That is amazing. That is kind of racist.
And I'll tell you something else I'm not going to do anymore. I'm not going to go to Starbucks for coffee anymore. And I'll tell you why. Two reasons. Number one, I don't think I should have to learn another language just to order a cup of coffee. You know? What happened to small, medium, large? You know, there's a reason we didn't convert to the metric system, people. We don't get it. I went in the other day and some guy goes, I'm a barista. I go, shut up, you pour coffee. And the other reason I don't want to go anymore is because my wife will not just order a coffee. Oh my God. It's like this chemistry lab experiment. We have one right by our house, and every day when we go in there, we drink way too much coffee because we're in there every day. So we pull through the drive-thru, and every time we pull through the drive-thru, I hesitate, look at Gail and go, okay, what do you want?
Let me see.
No, I had that yesterday. It's coffee, for God's sakes. All right. I'm going to have a large mochiato with 3 shots of almond, 3 shots of dolce. I want no sugar, no fat, no foam, and I want an extra large cup. I'm not ordering that. Of course, do I, fellas? Yes. Because I'd like to see these again at some point. So I decided I was drinking too much coffee and that I was going to just go with a hot tea. So I gave Gail's order and I said, I'll just have a hot tea. So we pull around the drive-thru window and the girl hands me Gail's chemistry lab experiment. And she hands me my hot tea and I go to take a sip of my tea and I went, good God, lady, this is like a bazillion degrees. And the girl in the window goes, did you order hot or cold tea? And I went, hot. And she went, really? I'm getting busted by a coffee chick? So I have a daughter, and I know if you start arguing with girls, they just throw that wall up, you don't get through. So I thought, I'll use some psychology on this girl. So I took out my wallet, I took out a $100 bill. And I said, sweetheart, I will give you this $100 bill if you can drink 1/3 of that tea. And she took a sip of the tea, and she went, whew, that is hot. And I went. So she takes my tea and pours it in a gigantic cup of ice. And I go, well, now it's too cold. And she goes, what are you, Goldilocks? Like, what are you making, minimum wage? Shut up. So she throws it in the trash, pours another hot tea, gets another cup of ice, and hands it to me and says, you do the math. Okay, at this point, I'm hotter than the tea. And thank God my wife was there, because she goes, let's just pull away, just pull away. So instead of being smart and pulling off to the side of the road to do my little mixture, I'm driving with one knee, I go to pour that hot tea on the ice, and we hit a speed bump, and scalding hot tea went Now I'm screaming bloody murder, swerving all over the road. My wife goes, what's wrong with you? I go, just pour scalding hot tea in my crotch. She takes a cup of ice and dumps it in my lap. I go, what are you?
Like, that's helpful, right?
Isn't that great? And the Michael Jr., the travel, it was part of a longer bit where when he called somebody's name, he would tell them if their name traveled, meaning if it could be a white person's name or a black person's name. So that was what the travel was all about.
Right,
so
yep. I love that one.
I know, they're both hysterical. So happiness homework we did. We can go into healing herbs. And again, I'm going to tout the beneficial properties of cayenne pepper. It's got anti-irritant properties. It clears congestion, antifungal properties, migraine headache prevention. We've talked about that before. Digestive aid, anti-rendus properties, helps produce saliva, useful for blood clots, detox support, joint pain relief, antibacterial properties, and on and on. So cayenne pepper is a really good herb to have, a really good plant to have in your garden. I actually just planted some yesterday. And in the process of planting my garden, last year we had tons of bugs, and I'm constantly on a search to try and find an all-natural bug spray that's effective to kill, you know, things like aphids and stuff like that in my garden so that they don't eat half of my garden, you know. And then there's the battle, of course, with the skunks and everything else that tries to burrow through. But this one is really easy. I actually found it on reference.com, so I'm going to try this one this year because the one that I tried last year I didn't think was as effective as it could be. It's very easy. You just chop a bulb of garlic and a small onion. Add those along with 1 teaspoon ground cayenne pepper to 1 quart of water. Let the garlic, onion, and pepper steep in the water for at least an hour, and then strain the liquid to remove the solids. Discard the solids. Add 1 tablespoon of dish soap to the solution and mix thoroughly. Spray the bug killer directly onto the plants, and that's it. And you can fill a gallon container with water and add 1 tablespoon of dish soap or mild detergent. This is for people if you want to use it on your own skin. Mix it thoroughly and add the spray to a bottle. Spray liberally onto the skin. So that's it. So if you want to use it for yourself, just a gallon container with water, 1 tablespoon dish soap or mild detergent, mix thoroughly and add it to a spray bottle. So what do you think about that?
Well, I definitely love cayenne. It has so many different things that are good with it. You know, I use it on so many things. I would definitely love to try that one out.
Absolutely. Like I said, mine last year, my bug killer didn't really seem to be that effective. So I'm going to try this one this year. I'm always looking for something. And my neighbors and I have traded recipes before. And just, I think that this one, though, because of the garlic, also, I think maybe will work a little better as well as the cayenne. So I'm excited to try it. Let's see what else we have here. Well, we've done the comedy corner. We can go into how much time we got left.
We got about 6 minutes.
Okay, so let's go right into dancing and jamming while we go pee, shall we? And then we'll finish up with Maggie, or, well, we're not going to do Maggie's moments. We're going to do something different. And then positive affirmations and scriptures and things my dad said.
All righty. Which one would you like?
we're gonna go ahead with the Johnny.
All righty. Here you guys go. Enjoy. This is a great song. I love this one.
Thank you.
I love that song. He's such a great guy.
Isn't he amazing? He actually started playing guitar at the age of 12 and made this album at age 15. And it went platinum and hit number one on Billboard's New Artist chart. He has toured with the Rolling Stones, Buddy Guy, Aerosmith, B.B. King, Blues Traveler, Jeff Beck, Sting. He was invited to play for a White House audience for the President and Mrs. Clinton. And he also was selected by the newly elected Minnesota governor, Jesse Ventura, to perform at his inaugural ball. He is amazing. I mean, he's in his 30s now, but the fact that Joe Cocker re-recorded his song, I thought was amazing. And I was going to, instead of doing Maggie's Moments, go ahead and play Joe Cocker's version, but we're running out of time. So what I was thinking is, when we close, can we just end with like that song instead of our
sure.
usual close? Okay, cool. So moving right on, we've got two segments left to get through. Positive affirmations and scripture. Happiness is a choice. I base my happiness on my own accomplishments and the blessings I've been given. Put that on a post-it note, put it on your phone, say it over and over, and it will start to sink in and make you feel better. King James Version, scripture that I chose was from Ecclesiastes 3:12. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. So that's the positive affirmation in scripture for this week. Please enjoy them. Things my dad says, it's hot out there. When I went down to visit my dad the last time, we had kind of warm weather, and he's constantly sucking water like a camel. He knows to stay dehydrated, constantly drinking water. And with the heat that's coming upon us now, we're coming into summertime, it's really important to stay hydrated. Some of the symptoms of dehydration include dry mouth, your eyes stop producing tears, some sweating may stop, muscle cramps, nausea, vomiting, headache, heart palpitations, lightheadedness. It's very, very important to stay hydrated during the summer months. So please drink lots of water. Keep it with you wherever you go. Drink water, stay hydrated, and keep yourself healthy. That's my things my dad says for the week. So if you want to go ahead and close out, we can, instead of doing our usual close for the show, do Joe Cocker's Lie to Me. I think that'd be cool. Sound good?
All righty. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. We definitely appreciate y'all being here, and much love to everybody. Maggie, go for it.
Thank you so much, and support the network. We're totally, totally listener-funded. So please, support L&M, support Open Eyes. Any donations that you can throw our way would be greatly appreciated. We do this for nothing, and this is to bring quality programming to you. So please support the network. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a great week. Can't be that you never leave. I'm just trying to make.